Hey, it's Bill Simmons. Did you know I've had my podcast for 15 years? Do you know that it is the most downloaded sports podcast of all time? Did you know I have guests from the sports world, from the culture world, people who work for The Ringer, people outside The Ringer, celebrities, experts, you name it. It's on my podcast 3 times a week, late Sunday night, late Tuesday night, late Thursday night, The Bill Simmons Podcast. Check it out on Spotify.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What the f*** you, Ian, right? What the f*** you? What the f***?
Hi everyone, welcome to Righty's House. Hope you're all safe and well. Today, we're going to talk about Liverpool, Crystal Palace, Darwin, Nunez's headbutt. Then we're going to talk about Arsenal's win over Leicester. We're going to give some flowers to Jamie Bynoe-Gittins after his first Bundesliga goal. And my guest is Mr. Ryan Hunt. How are you doing, Mr. Ryan Hunt?
Hi, Mr. Ian Wright.
Rilo Ren. Ryan Andieta.
Reisker Hundieta. Bundesliga. Ryan Munich. Listen, someone's got to stick up for that fucking league in our chat.
Know,
in our chat.
You got kicked around the place, bro. We'll speak about it later, but you got Nunez. You got Nunez in the chat. What's it called? What was I going to say? How's everything, bro?
Yeah, all right, man. Thanks. Yeah, doing cool? All right. Yeah. Hanging in there.
Man. The study I listened to the other day, you know what I mean? It was, that was fantastic. And some of the stuff you're speaking about, the deepness, some deepness. That was very touching to me as well. And that's why I sent you the message. But the fact is, right, I was, I got to say about the other stuff we were talking about. You know the stuff we can't talk about, what fans, like, I was in the pub the other day, would come and say, why aren't you lot saying anything? Why aren't you lot saying anything? And it's like what you were saying on Stadio. You have to try and explain to people, you can't actually say anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, you know, all the legalities, but
I think it's especially difficult for you because you and I, you know, one of the things that for those who aren't aware what we're talking about on the Stadio episode last week, Moose and I were talking about, you know, like fan bias and reaction to troubling allegations or criticism of a club, and we wanted to do it in more of a general way because I don't think it's about any specific case. I think it's about the whole when anything like that comes out, and especially in a week where, you know, Benjamin Mondi went to trial and more details are coming out about his allegations and the stuff that he's been charged with, which are grim. Sorry, just apologies if you hear any noises in the background. They're doing some construction next door. They've just fired up. They wait for us to record and then they fire up the mega drill. But yeah, so, you know, the Ryan Giggs trial and the details coming out about that, and they're horrible. And obviously, you know, the stuff that we talked about with the unnamed Premier League footballer that had been charged, and we talked about it. The point was that if people don't hear about it often on the podcast, they assume that it's a deliberate thing just to swerve.
You're staying away from it, and I have had conversations
about this behind the scenes and how, you know, and it's
troubling.
Yeah, because this is frustrating for you, I think, especially someone who is a lot more high profile and, you know, on places like Match of the Day. And it's just, you want to, but you can't often and more often than not. So anyway, but yeah, I appreciate the kind words about it, man, because we wanted to do it.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We're recording this on a Tuesday. We need, you know what we need to start with?
Go on.
I never thought I'd see the day that on Monday Night Football we'd have Carragher being like, and then look here. He turns, and that is actually when he goes to headbutt Anderson. We got the slow-mo Skypad breakdown of Darwin Nunez.
Because I was doing that for the Premier League. When it first happened, I didn't quite see how much of the head hit the face, but when I watch, because I'd done some analysis in the first half for that game, and my analysis was built on Nunez and the fact that his link-up play is coming towards the ball. Anderson, the way Anderson played him was, for me, exactly how you play a player making his debut in a club that they actually need to win, coming up against a very experienced defender. And when you watch what he done, it was from a defender and from a opposing team point of view going to Anfield, he played him perfectly. If somebody's analyzed and looked at him and seen, you know what, this guy's, he'll go. Because the things that you do, I remember being at Palace. When I was at Palace, people knew that I had a short fuse. And I did have a short fuse. Like I even mentioned it last night. Listen, I had a short fuse. I got sent off in my career maybe 4 times. A couple I think was for like, you know, 2 yellows. And it was never like, it wasn't like that kind of stuff. It was just like, you know, just going over the top. Like I remember there was one where I got sent off against Leeds for West Ham. Ian Hart, I just went in for a challenge like you do. And Ian Hart went down like I've pole-axed him. And before the referee, he already had the card out and I felt wronged. And as I was disputing it, he just sent me off. But what I saw from that game is, like I was saying, at Palace, you could play in a game like that where people knew you've got a short fuse. And I got it a lot. And they were doing everything what they'd done to Nunez. Like when the ball's up the other end, they're pulling you. You know, they just push you in the back. You know what I mean? They just get close when they don't need to. You know, when you're getting ready to run, they just grab your arm. So it's all awkward. So what it's doing...
It's like the accumulative buildup of...
It's exactly what it was. And yeah. When I watch it, I think there's something on Twitter. I think it's on Redmen. I think Redmen put it on. And it just shows, you know, when people say, oh, welcome to the Premier League, this is what it's about. That was pretty much it. What we saw last night. Now, you know, it's the kind of thing like Dennis got that. Remember people, you speak about Dennis now. The last thing people say about Dennis Bergkamp is, but he's got a little bit of nasty side to him. Now, you've got to have that in you naturally. But when Dennis came, he came from Italy where, you know, he would go down. You know, you touched him, he would do. And like, I remember like Tony, everybody, you had to have a word with him. Even when I used to speak to him because we roomed together, you just speak to him about Dennis. Even if you feel like it's, you know, it's a foul and that you have got to do more to make them see that this is not going to get to you. Because what happened to us with Dennis's first, like, might have been 10 games until Southampton, he scored 2 great goals, was he was targeted. That's what's going to happen to Nunez.
Yeah, yeah. Especially now. That's
absolutely,
the bad thing about
absolutely.
This.
Especially yeah. Because what I said last night, Ryan, was Liverpool, I think their red card offences is very minimal.
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
what I mean? It's very, very minimal. And when's the last time you've seen, if you really look, Ryan, at a team in the top echelons of their league player that's got a fuse that can go like that? You don't see it.
No, not a lot. No.
You just don't see it. And I was astonished. But at the same time, when you look at the way Anderson played him, played a blinder on him.
Yeah, but also I think the thing that's worth pointing out is that Anderson doesn't actually do anything particularly special or out of the ordinary, or he doesn't even really rough him up. It's just interesting you talk about Dennis, because I think Dennis going down a little bit, if you think about how kind of gritty and how elite defensively Serie A was at the time that he left and came to England, you kind of had to go down a lot of the time just to be noticed that something was going on. So I think that it was, I think with with Darwin Nunez, for example, here, there's a lot going through his mind. Like, he's a young player. It's his home debut or competitive home debut.
Chomping at the bit.
You know, there's, he wants to impress. That the immediate loss, obviously, three games out is not good for them because they've got a lot of people missing at the moment. But I think in the long term, I think this is a massive positive for Liverpool, actually.
For him.
For Darwin Nunez to learn this lesson straight away.
Yeah, that's going to be the learning curve for him, because, like, what's going to happen? It's just like, if you switch that around, right? So if we had an experienced number nine playing against an inexperienced centre-half, you learn from that experience. Because what you're going to do as, like if it was a Shearer against someone, like if Shearer plays against someone like Anderson, it's Anderson's first couple of games in the Premier League. The instructions to Al, he wouldn't even need the instructions, will be rough him up. Get him off his game. You know what I mean? You need him to be focusing on you rather than just staying calm and playing for the team. You need him to start thinking he wants to hurt you, he wants to foul you, he wants to do that sort of stuff. And what I saw was from Nunez was in certain incidents when he was just like, he's just running across there, he just nudged him and done something to him that just made him like, fucking hell. And what people have to understand is when people say stuff like welcome to the Premier League, it's not this fucking crunching tackle. It's accumulation of antagonizing somebody.
Also, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. And the thing is, right, I don't think that he's somebody like, I was reading on a couple of comments, people saying, he needs to bulk up, need to get him in the gym. He doesn't actually need to do it. Of course, he's going to need to get a little bit more physical in respects of backing in and challenges, because like we've seen, he's great in the air. He's got great pace. I personally thought that his link-up play last night, right, watching him, especially in the first half, there was opportunities for Robertson to pass into him and people to pass into him into that lane where you need him to make the move, link the play, because I thought that Liverpool played into Palace's hands in the way that they couldn't go through the middle, because I think Liverpool now, especially without Thiago, they're lacking somebody who's going to pass it through those lines. You know, RV Elliott played well, but he's playing on the outside of the game. He wasn't making thrusting passes into someone like Nunez to hold it up like how we'd see Firmino try and hold it up, and then they link the play and go from the edge of the box there. They weren't doing that. And the only reason in the end why they scored their goal is when somebody done some unbelievable individual skill like he did, Luis Diaz, from out there, cut inside and scores a fucking worldie. Right, that was the only way they were going to break them down, because what I saw with Palace last night is that their game plan was, we want them to go wide. We know they've got players who can put the ball in the box. But between Anderson, Gehi and Ward, they'll deal with that. I thought that the play for Liverpool was to try and get to the byline, cut back, because them guys were getting themselves situated on the six-yard box. But it wasn't happening because I didn't think that they could link the play well enough to get them in the deep areas. So, you know, it was one of those games for him where I could just see the frustration just building. I could see it building.
I think that first 20 minutes for Liverpool was so key because they had all the ball at one point. Was it like they started really, really well? They had all the ball. They were kind of really penning Palace in, and they, you know, it was like, right, they're going to score in a minute. This is going to be 3, 4, or 5. It really felt like that in the early stages. And Nunez, you could tell, he had that one at the back post.
Yeah.
Tried
with the volley. Yeah.
If one of those goes in and he settles down a little bit, you know, it just doesn't happen later on.
But you know what happens in those games? Like when you're going through with a defender, right? I've played in those games. And all that needs to happen for you is you need to have a couple of good touches, get the ball, go past them. Maybe they foul you. The fans get on your side because then the fans can see, I know what he's trying to do. So then the fans will get on your side because you're doing a bit. And if he just nicks one of those goals, I'm not sure. Could he have headed that one? I always feel with the number nine, when a cross comes across like that, I know that there was a player in front of him who kind of mistimed it and that may have put him off. I always feel that you've got to be attacking the back post, because when you look at the height of his foot when he was trying to volley it in, very difficult to control, seeing it in the split second he did. Those are the things that you needed. And then what happens is, right, is that you needed that to hit the target. Then the chance what he got where he chested it, but he has to chest it back towards everybody, because if he chests it to the left, he's cutting out his angle for the goal. So you're chesting it back into an area where the defender comes in to try and get that touch. So those were the little margins that weren't quite working, weren't quite going for him, what would just build on the frustration. And this is why I'm fascinated with that yesterday. And he'll learn from it.
For sure.
But what was good about watching that was the culmination in the build-up and then in the end, the sending off. And then you look at it and you think to yourself, okay, I get that. And like you say, Rai, I genuinely believe that for that to happen this early in his Liverpool career, for a team that, let's face it, Rai, they can't afford to lose any games. A draw for Liverpool is like a loss. And they know what it's like chasing down that fucking Man City side.
Although, with a man down, they were really, really good.
Mm.
This is a good Palace side.
Yeah.
Like, Palace are legit, man. They are going to hurt some teams this season. And they remind me a little bit of, like, teams who maybe don't even qualify for Europe, because I'm not sure if they're there yet. But they can kind of play kingmakers in where the title goes.
Yeah.
You know, if you have to go to Palace later in the season, I haven't checked the fixtures that far ahead, but if there's someone who is pushing for a Champions League spot or the title late in the season, and I know it kind of goes into a little bit of the cliche when Liverpool threw it away that time with Suarez at Selhurst Park, but now this new iteration of Palace under Patrick Vieira, with the players that they've got in there, the players coming back, Wilf, I think, getting a little bit more help and not having to play hero ball all the time. Saying that the day after he scored an absolutely unbelievable goal, which was...
We'll go into that as well quickly.
The thing about Wilf, it's like, you know he's got that. You know it's there. And when he does it and he's so devastating, you're kind of like, oh my God, man, like how different things could have been for this guy if something had gone a certain way at a certain age. Do you know what I mean?
Honestly, because I say, and I'll back it and I'll continue to say it, when Fergie brought in Ronaldo and you saw what Ronaldo was doing in his early days and that we've seen what Ronaldo's gone on to be, I could see the pattern of why you'd go for someone like Wilfred Zaha easily.
100%.
I could see why you'd do it, because the way he played last night, it's almost like he played the kind of game what you expect. That's how he should be playing now. Nothing's bothering him. You know, they're not getting a lot of the ball. He's working his fucking socks off. You know what I mean? He might be getting it now and then, every now and then, but he's just keeping everybody going. That's what he done last night. And then what we saw from a Palace side was the mistake what Liverpool made for the goal was marginal. Because when the ball went out to Eze, for me, I believe that while the ball was in the air, I think that Fabinho should have already been close enough to challenge him. And then by the time the ball got to him, Fabinho had overcommitted himself. And you saw what Eze done. He just went through the two of them like they weren't there. Wilf was playing unbelievably last night, playing himself off of Nat Phillips. Just running off of Nat Phillips. So then once that went through, I was saying, okay, can you finish? Because remember, the problem that Palace had against Arsenal was they missed very, very good chances. And I'm thinking, can Wilf... When he took that chance, I was saying, this is a performance. This is the performance you see from Wilfred Zaha. This is why you could see why Palace fans, and like you've just said, can say, if the sliding doors had gone differently for him, if Fergie doesn't leave, he doesn't get involved.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, we talk about this every time something good happens with Wolf Saha, but that is honestly
you
one
can't
of the
help it because when you see him, in that kind of when you see him in that scenario, like last night, playing with his head, letting his ability, you know, like giving those players that support and that encouragement to say, we've got Wilfred up there, man. We're fine. And let's face he could have scored two more goals last night.
Yeah. That's the other side of it where you're just like, you've got to do better on those more
absolutely.
Of the time.
Because, against the caliber of team like that, right? Simply because Patrick, the way he set the team up was brilliant. They were fantastic, the five and then the three and the two. And they worked their socks off, all of them. And what you need the striker who is good enough, like Wilf, we might get a couple of chances. We have to take them. You just have to be more ruthless with taking the chance. Because if Wilfred takes the chance, the second chance, the touch for one of them where he ran through and then, you know, Alisson came out and blocked him, I was very surprised, because that is, in a nutshell, what you're waiting for as the only striker when you've won, and he missed it. But I think that Palace...
Slightly heavy touch before the finish, right?
I think that Palace, this season, are going to really smash someone. They're going to smash someone.
I know they've only got 1 point from their first two games, right? But based on the performances against, well, you know, one of only two teams who have won their opening two games, Arsenal.
Mm.
And against the Liverpool side at Anfield on a Monday night for the first home game of the season. And they come away with that with a point. I think that Vieira behind the scenes will be like, yeah, we've only got a point on the board, but we're good. You know, there was a period last season where Brentford had that really bad run. And Thomas Frank was just like, yeah, we're playing fine though.
Yeah.
We're actually playing really well. And the same thing Thomas Tuchel said, I think when they drew at home to Burnley and then went on a bit of a weird run, Chelsea, he was just like, no, I'm really happy with the performances. We're creating chances. We're going to be fine. And that's Patrick Vieira behind the scenes. I imagine will just be like, guys,
I'm not joking.
The way we played these first two games against two different sides,
we're going to be fine. And you know what? Leaving Liverpool last night, knowing what it meant to Liverpool to have to win that game, leaving them last night, going on the coach and whatever, you will be buzzing, whoever the next game is. Mm. Because that was a performance where you think to yourself, that was a very good, resolute performance.
They've got Villa at home next game.
You see, that's a brilliant game for both of them.
But also, if you're Vieira, you're looking at that now. If you're drawing them up on the schedule and you're kind of doing your own calculations in your head, that's 3 points. Like, anything less than 3 points against Villa at home for Palace for them will be, I imagine, feel like a little bit of a disappointment because how solid they're looking.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and Villa are tricky to figure out, I think, at the moment. This is the thing about the Premier League this season, not wanting to go off on a bit of a tangent.
No.
But there's a large clump of teams who have really high ceilings, but also their floors are, we don't know how low their floors are yet. Mm-hmm. So it's like there's a big mid section of the Premier League this season, which is going to be like a bit of a free for all.
Yes.
Because we have this break because of the World Cup. I think that puts so much pressure on teams lower down the table sooner.
They have to get it done.
Because if someone's like hovering in 16th for a month in November, and then you come back and you have that massive run of fixtures over Christmas and New Year, that's not a happy place to be.
The thing with that, right, is nail on the head in respects of, you know what it's like when you get the international break, whether you're going into the international break and you've got momentum or you've gone into international break and you've kind of lost momentum and then you have the break and you're like, oh, fuck, we've got to sit on this and wallow and stew in this. Can you imagine? Let's say, for instance, you look at the way West Ham have started, you know, Forest, I'm really pleased for Forest to get something. You just need, because when you come up, right, you need something, because if you don't get a draw or the win or something, especially from the teams that you'll go against, like Forest would go into that game against West Ham and say, you know what? Yes, they are good. They've got, but you know what? This is the kind of game at home, first game, we have to get something out of.
Yeah, and you want to get off and running.
You want to get off and running because I feel for them, because if they do not, like the way Fulham have started, they've got, obviously they're going to have to keep that up. I think Forest will play more, and I think they'll play a bit more into people's hands, where people will try and suck them on and then play through them. They've got to be more careful for me, you know. And then who else was there? So Forest, Fulham, and Bournemouth. Same with Bournemouth. I think that Bournemouth and
Bournemouth got pepped. They're patterns. The Scott Parker has Bournemouth playing. They're amazing. I don't think we'll be able to stop them. They're so good. 4-0.
Thank you very much. Bam. You know, the thing is, with Bournemouth and the way they started, and the same with Fulham, which may hinder Forest, is that they know exactly what to expect from the start of this Premier League season. They've been here before. They've been here and they know what you need to do. And like we say, right, going into a month off, someone's going to have to be down there, and it's going to be interesting to see who that's going to be. And that's why, I don't know, Ryan, maybe you think that's why Fulham have started so quickly. I think Bournemouth were all over Villa. They were all over him. Just like how I said about how Fulham were all over Liverpool. Can they keep that up? Because that's what they're going to have to do. It's going to be very, very tough. But for me, Palace, I think, knowing Patrick like I know him, that he's looking to get further than... He's looking to break the top 10.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think he's got the kind of team, right? Especially if they make a couple more signings. I think they need something else in the midfield to go along with Eze. And Jeffrey Schlupp is very underrated.
Because they've got a lot of grit in there.
Yeah, yeah.
They could do with like a bit more of a ball player, I think.
You know, someone who can get it right because what you saw with Liverpool is that Liverpool were all over them. And even when Palace got it, they were able to bang, 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 break. But you need someone at some stage to say, right, let's hold it, take this thing, let's pass around them for a bit, then get out. So as we can get a bit of the ball and then manage the game a little bit. You're not going to manage it a lot against Liverpool, but you need somebody. And I don't think Eze is the one, because Eze is the one who can play a bit further on, beat players like we saw him do, and then progress into the opponent's half. They need somebody.
He's a final third player. Yeah.
Yeah. We need somebody in that six. Maybe Decore might be the one, but you need somebody who can get it, because I like him.
Me too. I think he looks good. He's looked good.
Seen the last couple of games, the cramps kicked in, and that's what the Premier League does, man. The Premier League works you, and the cramps kicked in on him. But hopefully he's the one, because if Palace can get to control the game and then have their little spell where they go bam, 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 Wilf, bam, 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 Mateta, whoever it's going to be, they're going to cause teams 100%. So much problems. 100%. So many problems. You know, I hope that happens.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, you mentioned earlier, I'm gonna absolutely shoehorn a segue in here. Are you ready?
I'm gonna segue from
a point that people probably forgot that we'd even spoken about.
Go on.
You were talking about experienced centre forwards. Experienced defenders against up and coming centre forwards. Had the kind of inverse of that at the Emirates on Saturday, and you were there. You had a young centre back, William Saliba, in his first competitive home start for Arsenal against the wily old fox.
Yes, Jamie Vardy.
Despite scoring an own goal, which really wasn't actually that much of a howler, it happens. He put in a really impressive performance again, I thought, Saliba.
Right.
He's the real deal, I think.
Well, this is what I'm saying about you know, the way Vardy plays, he's not the centre forward. If he gets close to you, he'll hammer into you and do that sort of stuff. But you watch the way Saliba plays, he looks like he's in total control of every single thing what he's surveying. He's in total control. One of the most wonderful things I've seen for a long time at a football stadium, I saw in that game. Mm-hmm. When he scores the own goal, the reaction of the fans and the ovation every time he touched the ball for a couple of times afterwards was the kind of thing, if I'm playing, I'm thinking, wow, yeah, I'm loving this. He did not put a foot wrong in that game.
No, he's great.
We saw, you know, his positional play, you know what I mean? He's tackling, he's passing out of the back. Again, you're thinking to yourself, you know, you want to see him. You want to see him up against Haaland. Of course you do, because that's a whole different kind of test.
Yeah,
you know, we want to see that, and that will happen. But you know what? Looking at him now, and without going over the top, you're looking at a centre half that has every single attribute to go on to be unbelievable. He's go on to do brilliant things.
Do you know what? You could see
why in such a short space of time he's made the national squad because the composure passing out the back, the timing of the tackles. For what, 21? Jesus Christ.
There's been a bit of a track record of Arsenal signing good defenders, but also that have these moments, especially in their first few starts when you're just like, ooh. You're a bit like, with Saliba, the own goal is probably the first time, it's the only thing that we've seen so far that's a bit like, okay, that's in the negative column. But even that happens to the very best.
Very best. And, you know, trying to cut out a cross. I heard Jamie Carragher, who I've got pure love for, in his analysis, and he scored enough fucking own goals to have a major say on it. Right? He said that if you score an own goal,
just completely unnecessary.
An own goal, you're He says, if you've scored an own goal, you're in the wrong position because you're stretching or whatever, which was a good point. But I think at 21, you know what I mean, that's not a problem. But if we could, like, if we could just switch it to Johnny Evans coming up against a Gabriel Jesus with, I'm not saying a point to prove, but like listening to his interview afterwards and hearing him saying, listen, I loved my time at City. I loved my time at City. It was great, but I just want to play. We are now seeing a number nine who's just been let off the leash in respects of go and fucking cause mayhem, because that's the kind of game, right? And I'm not being disrespectful to Johnny Evans, but there's people will say, well, you're about to be because you're saying that first to Mark Card. Fact is, it's the kind of game, and the only thing that will keep him going, right, is the fact that it was Jesus, and we're talking about one of the elite players in this league. It's the kind of game where you start thinking, it's maybe I need to start thinking about, you know, the time.
Oh my God. I'm gonna send him to the,
you know, because I remember playing against people like Phil Babb, Rio Ferdinand, you know, when, you know, I'm putting Phil Babb in there simply because he was quick. He was at Liverpool, at Coventry before Liverpool. But I remember some things what he done, what used to get me time and space. And he was there, same with Rio. You know what I mean? It makes you feel the same with Michael Dewberry, those guys that make you start thinking in your head, my time is short. Yeah. Because the way for Jesus, from the goalkeeper to knock a long ball, another great ball from Ramsdale, for him to be able to flick it on and then go and get the flick on before the defenders got to it, then back into him, turn him, and then get the shot off, which he was disappointed he didn't score, is where you start to think, well, I'm losing my powers. It just happens. It's not like I'm not being nasty here. It's the kind of game when you get to that age, because I've been at the age. And then when you finish the game, right, you go in the dressing room, you sit down, you're doing your stuff, everybody's talking about, but you are thinking about, well, there's a time where that doesn't happen.
Do you know what though? Also being kind and giving Johnny Evans the benefit of the doubt, because I still think he's a good defender and he's been great since he went to Leicester. There's a specific kind of subgenre of striker that's just moved to a new club may have been slightly underappreciated. Players have played against them, but they've played against them in a different context. They've played against them for a Manchester City side where Gabriel Jesus wasn't the first choice, would either come on as a substitute, maybe start wide, start centrally, but it's a different kind of play. He's, you know, if you just look at, and I don't want to go amateur psychologist, like armchair psychologist and analyze body language, but his whole aura and demeanor is completely different. There's no shy, slightly sheepish Gabriel Jesus that we saw a lot at Manchester City. There is a, like, there's a little bit of alpha there.
Yeah,
which I honestly didn't think having watched.
I think when he first came,
League,
right? When he first
bit,
came,
yeah, a little bit. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. When he first came, and I think that he's tapped back in to go
all Carl Ancherism. He came and he had that dog in him, and gradually the dog got taken out of him. And now he's got the dog back in him again.
Dog back in, because when you looked at the way he played, he could have scored 4 goals. And I think that listening to him say that at halftime, he got the analysts to show him his misses. You know, he got them to show him his misses.
But to
hear him in his interview giving Eddie. Eddie Nketiah love.
I loved this.
It's all part of the leadership.
This is a really interesting dynamic to me that we just don't think, you know.
You know what people don't understand. Understand, because you've got to understand it from Eddie Nketiah's perspective. Finish season, scoring goals, gets his contract. We don't know what's happening with him leading all the way through to the last stages of his contract. Is he going to sign? Ain't he going to sign? We want him to stay. Ain't he going to stay? We don't know if Jesus is coming. Finishes the season brilliantly for us. Then, you know, then we buy Jesus. You know what I mean? After now he's signed his new 5-year deal. And then you've got to think, you've got to put yourself in Eddie's shoes. It's like, I'm behind him now. I've just been behind Lacazette and Aubameyang. But what Eddie's got to understand is he's behind an elite, I'm not saying them guys weren't elite, but an elite striker, and he will get enough games where he can play. But what I saw, even when Eddie came on, for the little time he came on, was a different energy. A different energy, because he's training with someone like that every day. You're hearing Gabriel Jesus saying about them doing the finishing. He says he's a brilliant player. He's going to be a great player. And Arsenal have two very good strikers here now. Those words for Eddie from somebody who's a leader in the group, like we just found out, him and Xhaka are leaders in the group to help Martin Ødegaard. To hear those words will infuse Eddie, because he'll know that he's got the time. And what we'll see, and I guarantee people watch Eddie the way he plays now. Like, for instance, if he plays in a Europa League game, or if he plays instead of Jesus, or there's a different energy to him, simply because this Jesus, who I think that Mikel Arteta has probably said to him, listen, we got this guy here and we believe that he's the real deal. We know you're the real deal, but we need you to help him. You know, because that was unprompted for him to give him that love in the interview. He doesn't have to do it, right? He doesn't have to do it.
No, I agree. Do you know what I genuinely love about this is that, what, you know, think of who were our number nine and number 14 last season. Mm. You know, you had Oba and you had Laka, who were really tight. Mm-hmm. And this season, you've brought someone new in who's taking the number 9 shirt. Mm-hmm. Eddie's taking the number 14. Yeah. And they seem to be clicking well. And having or developing a similar friendship to Oba and Laka. Yeah. But instead of 31 and 33, they're 23 and 25.
Wow.
Like, so, you know, Arsenal have got even younger this season, which for a squad that was one of the youngest in the Premier League last year, like younger, but more dynamic and more ruthless. Yes. That is fucking hard to do.
You know,
and I think that it's early days.
Yeah, it
is. Yeah, conceding a couple of goals. But I think the best thing about this was the response. Mm. Like, the response to each one was kind of like, Arsenal always felt like, maybe it felt like they had another gear. I just think all round it was really encouraging. And the best thing at this stage of the season is to pick up points and win games, but also being able to highlight small areas
absolutely
that you can improve.
And then watch it, and get momentum. Yeah. But you know what I wanted to do quickly is the Ashburton Army at the clock end. You know, those guys who now, Arsenal have now given them the opportunity for all of them to be together right down the bottom there at the clock end. It's almost similar to what Palace have done at their stadium. And I thought it was brilliant. It's a brilliant start. And I think that will only get better, because they were continuing to make noise. They were continuing to sing and they just kept going. And I think that that's going to be a massive addition to the atmosphere there, because we need it. We need it. And you know what? I like the fact that we're really quite close to the opposing fans, because they're right there and they're ready to go. And you could feel it. I loved it. I loved watching that the other day. It was something that was quite like, yes, there's so many things that's coming together. And the way Mikel's knitted the fans, the players, the fans with the club now. We'll see if the players can continue to thrive off of this momentum. You know, it could be good.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's funny you say that, because like the harmony and stuff, because it's like you had the. Do you remember when like Mikel and Jonas, but was it they both signed
together? Yeah,
and they did that thing together, the video. Yeah. And actually, this week you had the women's players from the international break in the summer, and they were being welcomed by like both squads were together, because you had like Leah and Bukayo, Lotta came back, and they were, you know, Rafaela with a Copa America Feminina medal, and you know, it was just like, it just seems to be that
it's together, right? We're together, and it's a beautiful thing. It's a fuck, because you could see, and
but it's just been so disjointed for a while, especially with what's going on. I mean, a lot of people are making not comparisons, but especially with what's going on at Manchester United.
I was
going to
mention that
at the moment, and I think it's really key to point out that obviously, like, you know, I don't think there are any illusions among Arsenal fans. It's like they're not back in the Champions League. They've not pushed for a title yet. Like, there is a long way to go before you can deem it an overall success in silverware terms. But I think in terms of how far away a lot of people have felt from the club over the last decade, it's kind of just each step, making steps of progress.
Absolutely. But the thing is, right, what you see is, like, we're talking about at the moment the club, we're not hearing no noise from owner stuff, everything what they've done from the time Mikel's been there to this point, it's literally turned on his head, the noise. And then, you know, you just mentioned them and you look at Man United and we've got to mention the great Swiss Ramble.
Swish? Is that the basketball edition of Swiss Ramble?
The great Swiss Ramble. He put a thread on. It's brilliant reading in respects of like the detail, but it's fucking tragic.
Yeah.
It's tragic to read. Like watching the Sky the other day and listening to Jamie and Gary with their points. They both had great points. Why it had to turn into an argument-y kind of like, Jamie, look at me when I'm talking to you. It's like, what the fuck?
That was weird. Man went Thomas Tuchel on him.
Honestly, it went, well, Thomas Tuchel, let go of my hand, man. But like the thing is that it's so sad. And I said it on the Premier League show, I'm not going to do the jumping on this Man United bandwagon of hammering. That place is going through fucking turmoil. This isn't the time. Yeah. And fans are not going to thingy that.
Moussa and I talked a lot about it on Stadio in terms of football, from the football sense, because I think that everyone knows like the behind
it's
the scenes
fucking
stuff.
Horrible.
And Moussa said it on Moussa said it with you last week, right? Where he said the primary objective is shareholder dividends. I mean, bear in mind, this is a football club whose stock price is actually worth less now than it was when it was first floated.
Yeah, when they bought it. Right. The thing is, I don't want to go...
No, because we've done it.
I tell you what, it would be very easy because remember, it's funny because it's the same place. The way some pundits, let's face it, and I know they are, when Arsenal lost at Brentford at the start of last season, knowing how long a season is and how it can work out, I was very, very surprised with that. I remember I was sitting in that crowd because I was doing the game.
Got
and
memed
people
by
used,
the New York Knicks fan account.
I got memed, bro. By the New York Knicks, bro. And you know what? You think to yourself, yeah, but football's a crazy game. Yeah. And then you look, you go a year later, you know, not too far off the same day, maybe a couple of weeks and that, but and you see Man United get arguably one of the worst beatings in their history. You know, and I didn't find it funny at all. Because I played against Man United, the Man United sides that put Man United on the map. I'm not talking, you know what I mean? Of course, we could talk about 68 in their European, the Bobby Charlton, George Best, all the stuff. But the fact is, I'm talking about the Man United that after 26 years, this team made Man United like one of the greatest football clubs in the world. You know, yeah. And this is,
I mean,
why,
30,
this is why.
30 year anniversary of the Premier League.
Thank you very much.
You played through some of those great sides.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So to see them fall like this and watching players on the pitch. Last time I think I saw players, I remember England, Iceland, right? In the Euros. It's one of the first times I could properly say I saw players petrified to play. They were petrified. Mm-hmm. They were making the kind of mistakes that you're thinking, these guys are now, they've gone. And you know what I mean? Gone. To watch Man United like that now, it's not fun for me. You know what I mean? I don't know how many years this is going to take, but you know what? From the fans' point of view, who have been protesting from the day one, telling us everything, like I mentioned Swiss Ramble and what he said, they've been saying that from time. Obviously, we've seen it accrue more and more monies, what they've taken out. And, you know, the saddest thing, obviously, the monies that Man United still are able to generate is why they can spend £1 billion on players. It just shows you get the wrong people running. So that's why I say now, as much as our owners have like, they've been very quiet. They're letting our managers do their thing. Someone's got to buy that club and let them do their thing now.
Yep.
Because it's got to a place now, Ry, where for Man United fans, where this is wrong. It's like Newcastle. What he was doing at Newcastle was, for me, to the fans, wrong. Yeah. What the Glazers are doing to that football club is wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree.
Simple as that. It's wrong.
The only problem is, and we talked about it on Stadio, but just like, it's got to the stage now where there is so much to fix. It's going to take so long, but they need to do it quick.
Hopefully. We're giving flowers today to someone, aren't we, Ray?
Yeah, some quick flowers.
Jamie Bynoe-Gittens.
You go to the Bundesliga for flowers.
I'm going for Bundesliga for flowers because when you see this guy, his story, you know a lot about him, Ray.
Well, I wouldn't say I know a lot about him, but he's trod a familiar path. Mm. So for those who don't know about him, he's 18 years old. He is only just turned 18 as well. He plays for Borussia Dortmund. He came to Borussia Dortmund at, I think he was 16.
Yes.
And he came from Manchester City.
Yes. And before that, he's at Reading at 7, Manchester City at 14. And he's another one of those players that have been at Man City that said, no, I'm going to leave here. You know, he's played.
Yeah, yeah.
He's played like, he's always played above his age group. You know, like.
Yeah, he had a really quick progression from like, he got into the England under 18s and then only played twice before being promoted to the England under 19s.
Mm-hmm. Dortmund in 2020. He went to Dortmund in 2020.
Yeah, he's been there a couple of years now, which, I mean, it's like we said a lot with Jaden and with Jude as well. You know, moving to Germany at a young age when, you know, say like 16, 17, 18, when you've grown up in England or the UK is a big culture shock. It can be quite tricky to adjust. So it's a sign of what Dortmund offers you as a footballer in the footballing sense that so many people go there. Anyway, the reason we're giving him flowers is because he scored his first Bundesliga goal on the weekend. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As Dortmund beat Freiburg, we mentioned it on Stadio. They beat Freiburg 3-1.
You know what I love about it, right, is that he said, obviously, like he mentioned, like when Jadon Sancho was at City, he was doing bits, you know, scoring in the 18, scoring every game. And he said, you've got to take stuff. And he mentioned you've got to take stuff from other people to make the best version of yourself. He says, you've got to score and assist to be the best. You know what I mean? For what, 18? If you've got that mindset now, you know, fingers crossed he steers clear of injuries and that. But he's on a good trajectory. He sounds like his mind's right. And this is why I'm probably giving him flowers, because I love to hear and see somebody of that age with their mind right is not afraid to come out of their comfort zone, go somewhere and knuckle down, get it done, and stay focused. And that's why he's getting flowers.
Yeah, yeah.
We're giving him flowers. You know, I'm going to give some flowers to the Ashburton Army, the young batch of Arsenal fans that have taken it upon themselves to get together and sing their hearts out for the lads. You know, long may that continue. You're getting flowers. They'll say, fuck, I want your flowers. No, you're getting flowers, and you take those flowers and give them to your mum or something, but you're getting them because I think that's needed at our club. And what I saw in those moments was them get the whole crowd going. So flowers for you guys as well.
Yeah, man. All right, man, listen, I'm going to leave you to it.
Listen, right, I love you, man. So
love you too, man. Have a lovely day.
Thanks for coming, bro.
Thanks for having me.
Love you, bro.
Love you too, man. Enjoy your woolly hat in the most obscene heat that we've ever had.
Look how much I'm sweating. I'm sweating. Oh,
I'm not surprised you got a woolly hat on in August.
My missus ain't here, so you know I'm doing stupid stuff.
It's lovely.
Doing stupid stuff.
I'm gonna do the Gary Lineker have a word with him. Have a woolly hat on in August. All right, man. Much love.
I'll see you later, dude. Okay, thank you very much for listening, guys. Thank you very much to Ryan Hunt. What, we're 2 weeks in the season. And it's so exciting. So exciting. I'm really, really looking forward to the rest of this Premier League. And I suppose, you know, I can't lie. Arsenal, you know, 100% record at the moment. That does help. But at the same time, there's so much going on in the Premier League. I'm so happy to be involved in it. Listen, we'll speak again next week. I don't know what we're going to talk about, but we'll talk about something. Take it easy, guys. I love you.